Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is happening, everybody? Happy Tuesday. Welcome in to an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. And most importantly, thank you so much for being here today. Always appreciate you guys. What we're going to talk about primarily today is the NFL league meeting, specifically some rule changes and how they're going to affect the game. And more importantly, what general manager Brian Gutekunst had to say at the NFL league meetings. There was some really interesting information that I'm really excited to dig into and go over in more detail. But before we get there, per usual, just a couple of really quick housekeeping items. First and foremost, Packy the Packer, thank you so much for signing up to be a Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube member. All of you, make sure to check out those memberships on the Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube channel. You will love it. You won't be disappointed, I promise. Number two, a lot of you, I think, especially that are checking this out, obviously, on the YouTube channel, don't know that there is a full Pack-A-Day Podcast audio channel. And there is a lot that you get on that audio channel. So wherever you get your favorite podcast, whether it's Apple or Google or wherever you get your favorite podcast, the Pack-A-Day Podcast channel has every episode that's uploaded to the YouTube channel, save for the members-only episodes, including my episodes, the Daily Draft episodes with Ross. Those are all on the audio channel as well. Plus, we have a full team of over 20 members on the Pack-A-Day Podcast team. Some of them you've seen fill in on the YouTube channel when I've been out. They're doing an episode every single day. So right now, we're pretty much on three-a-days over on the audio channel. The Daily Draft, my episode, and then our daily episode that encompasses the entire podcast team. People like Dusty Evely, Perry Goldstein, Maggie Loney, so many more. There's a ton of great stuff over on that channel. So make sure that you're checking that out as well. If you'd prefer just to listen on the audio side and don't have to look at my face, there's a lot of advantages to that as well. So make sure you are checking that out, and just way more content that's even there than there is here on the YouTube channel. Last but not least, from a housekeeping standpoint, for those of you who don't know, I am doing a NFL draft special at a Wisconsin Timber Rattlers game in Appleton on April 19th. For $10, you get access to the game, a box seat game ticket, access to my live Q&A. It's an hour-long Q&A prior to the game in the Fox Club. And like I said, all for $10. So Timber Rattlers game, April 19th, NFL draft conversation, live Q&A with me in person. All of it for $10 per ticket. If you're not interested in me, just get the ticket for $10. And that deal is worth it in and of itself. If you're not interested in the baseball game and would prefer just to come for the hour and do the Q&A, do that for $10. Either way, it's a great deal. And obviously supports the Timber Rattlers, supports the Pack-A-Day Podcast. It is literally Pack-A-Day Podcast night at the Timber Rattlers Stadium. So support the channel. Make sure to get that. You can find the link to those tickets in both the audio notes today and on the video notes today as well. That does it for our housekeeping items for today, though. Where I want to start is with the NFL rule changes. And of course, the big piece, the big change that hit everyone like a ton of bricks was the swivel hip drop tackle rule change. And this has been branded by a lot of people as the hip drop tackle that is now banned from the NFL. I think we need to make a very clear clarification here that the hip drop tackle in and of itself is not banned. The swivel hip drop tackle is banned. Now, whether or not you have a ton of faith in the NFL and the NFL officiating to actually differentiate between the two and actually get this right in real time when they're throwing flags that result in 15-yard penalties and potential fines, that's another story. But every hip drop tackle is not banned from the NFL. So it is possible to do a hip drop tackle and have it not be a penalty, not be banned, no harm, no foul, maybe harm, because I guess it could still cause injury, but not be an actual foul. But if the player does the hip drop tackle and swivels around, that is what is the penalty. And per the NFL, there were 230 instances where this type of penalty took place in 2023. In case you're wondering how often that is, there were 272 games last year in the NFL, 230 instances of a hip drop tackle. That may not sound like a ton, but if officiated correctly, that's basically one additional 15-yard penalty per game in every single game. Maybe it's against your team, maybe it's for your team, who knows, but that's an extra stoppage. That's an extra pretty big 15-yard penalty. That's assuming they get it right. Maybe there's some that they call that aren't hip drop swivel tackles. Maybe there's some that they don't call, but if officiated correctly, that will have some impact on the game. Now, it seems like the overarching belief here is that this is not going to be something that NFL officials are expected to get right in real time. It does sound like they are going to be reviewing these after the fact, and players that do commit the fouls will be subject to fines. And those fines do add up, and I'm not necessarily a fan of that. These are always really difficult discussions to have. I agree with Jacob Westendorf, member of the Pack-A-Day podcast, of course, where he says, like, football is violent. It's kind of supposed to be violent. To an extent, I agree with that. I'm also pro trying to take dumb violence or meaningless violence or violence that's going to injure players at a higher rate out of the game and trying to make the game safe. Because if we are being real, if Josh Jacobs in week one gets hip drop swivel tackled and tears something and is out for the season, that's not good for the Packers. That's not good for the NFL. We want to watch as many of these star players week in and week out that we can. Heck, there are enough issues just trying to get guys not to pull hamstrings, much less tearing things due to dangerous tackles. So I see both sides. My overarching thought here, and actually before I even get there, Dyer Carriger, who I mentioned yesterday, who was doing great work over on Packer Report, did a full breakdown and reviewed all the tackles from 2023, which is a huge undertaking. He saw three potential Packers examples in 2023 that maybe could have been called. And you can check all three of those examples out over on his Twitter. But this doesn't seem to be something that's going to have a massive impact week to week, at least from a Packers standpoint. I'm sure we're going to see it week to week in the NFL, or at least see fines from it. But like I said, I'm all for player safety. My bigger issue here is, like I said, I don't necessarily give the NFL the benefit of the doubt that they're going to get this correct. We continue, I say we, but the NFL continues to put more on the official's plate. And maybe that isn't necessarily the worst thing, but we are getting to a point where the officials already have a lot to discern on a play-to-play basis. And I think we would all agree, it's not exactly like they're doing it with flying colors as it is. There are poor calls, non-calls, what is a catch, helmet to helmet, all this stuff that is getting called that already we're discussing almost at a weekly basis as to whether or not NFL officiating can actually officiate the game in real time at a level that's adequate for the biggest sport in America. Like, that is a question mark. So we're continuing to put more on their plate. And what we really probably need is more officials, meaning probably an extra official on the field. That's something that's probably been needed for some time now. And full-time officials, where this is their full-time job, and we're paying, I say again we, but the NFL is paying them at a rate where all of these officials aren't just looking to take the next Fox or ESPN or Amazon or CBS job that comes along so that they can get a better rate of pay in a cushier position that they don't have to be in these really difficult positions out on the field. So I believe the NFL, if they are going to continue to give more and more responsibility to these officials and put more and more on their plate, there probably needs to be an extra official and they should be full-time officials. But that, of course, costs a lot of money and the NFL is not wanting to do that. Maybe you can make up for some of it with all those fines that you're collecting and, I don't know, all the billions of dollars that you're making. Make the game a better place to watch and enjoy. Be a better steward of the game. Like I said, overall, my big picture take here is I ultimately don't care about this all that much. And we're going to talk about it, of course, and everyone's going to get up in arms about it. And it's going to be the, let's just make it flag football discussion. If they're really doing it the way that they're talking about, where it's, one per game, they're probably not going to call a ton of them on the field. And it's going to be, more on fines and things like that. It probably doesn't affect the game all that much. But we know, We know that this is going to go through a ridiculous point of emphasis period where every remote hip drop tackle that looks like there's a swivel is going to get flagged and fined, and players are going to have to go through that. And it's going to be super annoying, especially in preseason this year and probably early in the year. And then they'll get bored of it and move on to something new, and we'll stop discussing it. Undoubtedly, Green Bay will get screwed out of a win at some point because of a hip drop swivel tackle that got called that actually was just a hip drop tackle and not a swivel. And there should have been no foul, but they thought there was a swivel, but there was no swivel. And Green Bay will ultimately lose a game, just like they tied a game against Minnesota because of an awful roughing the passer penalty on Clay Matthews, when that was a point of emphasis where very clearly it was not a roughing the passer penalty. Should have been a win. Instead, it was a tie. I'm sure Green Bay will undoubtedly have that loss or tie on their record that should have been a one because they get to win because they get screwed over on something, some point of emphasis, dumb crap. We know that's probably going to happen too. And then we'll just move on like everything else. And we'll continue to watch the NFL at an absurd level and talk about the NFL at an absurd level and purchase products and all of it. And it'll just continue on. And then they'll come up with some other dumb rule and we'll get mad about that. And it is what it is. But I do wish the NFL was a little bit better of a steward of the game. And I wish I could just trust them to get this right. All right, you want to take a somewhat dangerous play out of football? All right, let's do it the right way. Let's make sure that the officials are in a position to be able to do so. I just don't trust them. And they haven't earned that trust, if we're being real. All right, couple other rule changes. Number two, it seems like the NFL kickoff rule changes are going to get tabled to May when it's just the owners' meetings and not the full NFL meetings. My guess is something still passes here and the owners just do it on their own accord, and we probably find out more about it in May, but nothing was approved as of yet, at least as of Monday. And I think we'll probably have to wait until those owners' meetings for that to get officially approved. And then we'll go over all of what actually gets approved at that time. Or if it doesn't get approved, I guess it just stays the same and maybe gets tabled until next year. We'll have to wait and see. There's a random rule where they are allowing for enforcement of a major foul by the offense prior to the change of possession in a situation where there are fouls on both teams. All right, whatever. This will come up two or three times in a season. Not really super concerned about that one. And then the third challenge rule, I think, is ultimately a good one. Now, it does potentially create more stoppages, but basically, if you get your first challenge wrong, you know you still get a second challenge. Before, you had to get both challenges right in order to get a third challenge. Now, you just need to get either your first or your second challenge right in order to earn a third challenge. I'm totally fine with that. Listen, if you screw up two challenges and stop the game twice for no reason, you deserve not to be able to challenge a third time. And most of the stuff that is like super big time plays, turnover worthy plays and scoring plays are automatically challenged anyway. I don't think you need more than three. Like I said, if you screw up two of them, you don't deserve a third anyway. If you get one of the two right, you get one back. I'm for that. That makes sense. Cool. Easy. Let's move on. And then last but not least, another thing I'm very much a fan of, the replay assistant will now be able to correct some incorrect calls for roughing the passer and intentional grounding. Some specific examples of, they called a penalty for a quarterback being hit to the head, and they called the roughing the passer penalty, and the NFL official on the sidelines reviews or up in the booth reviews it and sees that he clearly was not hit in the head. He can call down and say, hey, that's actually not a penalty, fix it. That's a great thing. And those are usually ones that they correct really, really fast. Same thing where if they call intentional grounding and they said that he was not out of the pocket when he threw the pass, and they review it and, you know, quickly up in the booth, and he was very clearly outside of the pocket, they can now call down and say, hey, you screwed that up. Take that back. Let's not call that a penalty. Those things happen very, very fast. And I am all for the official in the booth that actually can see it in slow motion, really quick on replay, to make those quick adjustments. I think we need more of that, not less of that. Let's get the call right and let's make it fast and make it quick. And a lot of times the ref in the booth, the replay assistant, can do that so much faster than all the refs on the field getting together and having the conversation, et cetera, et cetera. So overall, I'm fine with the rule changes. Let's just wait and see a little bit on this swivel hip drop tackle and see how this plays out. I'm not really overly concerned, but I do think they'll probably screw it up in some capacity and overemphasize it at first. And then, like I said, we'll move on. Everything else makes sense. I'm good with, and we probably don't need to go into much more detail with. What a phenomenal weekend of college basketball. And hopefully you, like me, enjoyed your experience even more by using Prize Picks. If you didn't, well, what are you waiting for? Right now, you can win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. you can turn $10 into $1,000 with your college basketball entries today. And it doesn't stop there. They have all sorts of entries available, including NBA, NHL, and so many more. Testing my skills on PrizePicks has been the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports, especially during March Madness. It's extremely simple to play, and they even have super fun promotions available like their Taco Tuesday, where select player projections are discounted up to 25% to provide even more value and excitement. They also have incredibly easy withdrawals, and for those of you that utilize Apple Pay, you can use it for quick and easy deposits into your account. College basketball is always fun this time of year, but it was so much more fun this past weekend with PrizePicks. I'll be sticking with Caitlin Clark this week and probably adding a few NBA selections as well, especially with the return of Chris Middleton to the Bucks. So what are you waiting for? Download the app today and use code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. That's the PrizePicks app using code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. PrizePicks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Hello, friends. If you're like me, you've been in numerous ticket situations that were just flat out frustrating. Recently, I had tickets to a Bucks game and I could not locate the tickets that were allegedly sent to me. It ended up in a huge hassle and led to me being completely frustrated by the entire experience. Ticket purchases should not be that difficult, and thankfully, they don't have to be. Game Time is the fast and easy way to buy tickets for all sports, music, comedy, and theater events near you. With killer last-minute deals and their lowest price guarantee, Game Time takes the guesswork out of buying tickets. I'm already eyeing up Bucks playoff tickets, and I know I'll be purchasing them through Game Time. My experience with Game Time has been simple, seamless, and completely without hassle. No more frustration, no more awful last-minute customer service phone calls, just easy access to great tickets. My favorite aspect of Game Time is their last-minute deals. You can save up to 60% off by buying last-minute tickets, and save even more with exclusive in-app deals on select seats ahead of the big game. And best of all, it's all covered with their low price guarantee. So take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY, PACKADAY, for $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed. All right, let's move on to Brian Gutekunst. And like I said, there was some really, really interesting stuff that came out of this little press conference with some of the media. Let's start with Xavier McKinney, because this is something that I've actually thought about and talked about in a couple different ways in a couple different conversations. Brian Gutekunst was asked about Xavier McKinney and why make this big investment into McKinney as a safety and a big free agent signing and so on and so forth. And his answer was that he was a very unique player and he fit the criteria of what they wanted to go out and do in free agency. And here's how I've sort of talked about this in the past. Somebody asked me prior to free agency, they said, Andy, I think it was on a live chat, would you rather have Xavier McKinney or would you rather have, I think it was like Jordan Fuller and Julian Blackman? Which would you rather have? And I said, that is super easy. I would much rather have Xavier McKinney than Jordan Fuller and Julian Blackman. And take the players away here. The question that this person was asking was, would you rather have the high level player, one player at a high price, or take that high price and split it into two good players? And what I have said for a very long time, and actually I've had this discussion with Peter Bukowski, I want to say like 2 or 3 years ago, maybe it was even a little bit longer, on Locked On Packers. He had me on and I kind of went into my full thought process on this of free agency. What you want to do ultimately in free agency is not pick these 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 mid-range deals. Because what you're doing a lot of times on mid-range deals is you're overpaying for good players. And why I don't like that is because the NFL in general and good general managers know how to find good players. Look at Green Bay just this past year. They find Bo Melton, or year and a half, they find Bo Melton off of a practice squad, good player. They find Rasul Douglas a couple years back off of a practice squad, good player. They find Devondre Campbell off the scrap heap. He becomes an all-pro, like, good player. You know, they find Keyshawn Nixon for the bare minimum, good player. They find in the draft, Carl Brooks and Colby Wooden and Dontavian Wicks and Jaden Reed and, you know, Luke Musgrave and Tucker Kraft and Lucas Van Ness, good player, good player, good player. Like, Brian Gutekunst knows how to find good players. guys who can play, guys who can go out and compete, guys who can help your team, depth pieces, etc. It is not particularly hard in the NFL to find average to good players. What is very difficult to do is to find elite players. And it's even more difficult to find elite players who are in their prime or heading into their prime. That is the white whale. That is what you are searching for. And what we have seen from Green Bay, far more often than not, going all the way back to Ron Wolf, to Ted Thompson, to Brian Gutekunst, is specifically this. And especially for someone like Ted Thompson, who I think spelled this out really loud, I think we can probably look at it even more in the Thompson and the Gutekunst era. Clearly, Reggie White was a piece of this. You can argue that some of the, let's say Sean Jones, Santana Dotson, Eugene Robinson type of signings were more in like the good to really good. I would say really good though, but he went like big game hunting in free agency a lot of times, Ron Wolf did. But more specifically, even with Ted Thompson, like Ted Thompson brought in two really big time free agents in his entire tenure. Ryan Pickett was probably the one example of kind of that mid-tier free agent, but Charles Woodson and Julius Peppers, two elite level players, he went out and signed to big contracts. He only did it. He barely made his way into free agency, but when he did, he was looking for those A-plus players, Charles Woodson and Julius Peppers. Brian Gutekunst has also had a pretty big sort of stamp on this exact same philosophy. Now, Jimmy Graham did not work out, very clearly. But Jimmy Graham was an intention of spending big money to get a premium player at a position of need. It just didn't work out. He failed in Green Bay, and it sucks that that happened. But that was his foray that year into signing a big-time free agent. Jimmy Graham, we might forget it looking back because he sucked so much as a Packer. Sorry, he just did. But that was a big-time free agent signing. And a lot of people, myself included, were extremely excited about what he could potentially bring to that team. And it, like I said, it just ultimately didn't work out. But that was a big-time free agent signing. Jimmy Graham was a big-time Pro Bowl caliber player that they brought in. Obviously, Xavier McKinney, Josh Jacobs, both of these sort of like big-time player acquisitions that can be big-time, potentially Pro Bowl or maybe even All-Pro players at their given positions. Now, we can look at the Za'Darius Smith, Preston Smith, Adrian Amos, and Billy Turner signings. This is where we could maybe argue that they went for the good to really good, but Za'Darius Smith was a big-time signing and I think was more on that line of maybe not quite your Charles Woodsons or your Reggie Whites, but he was a big time free agent signing, top of the market edge rusher. And that first year, of course, he was phenomenal, big time signing. Preston Smith has turned out to be a pretty big signing from that deal. And I would argue Adrian Amos, maybe not top of the class, but he was a top, seven, eight, six, five-ish safety. Like he was a really good safety in the NFL when they signed him. And I think probably the number two safety on the market, maybe right behind Earl Thomas that season. Like he went out. The other thing we have to remember about that thing is they were on a specific situation where he took over. The roster was really sort of in a place where it needed some big investments. And Goody went and said, hey, I've got a ton of money to spend. There's some big time free agents out there and I'm going to go get them. But overall, what Goody specifically and even Ted Thompson have basically done is said, if we're going to go and spend big time money, and this is what he means by fitting the criteria, they need to be on this echelon. They need to be great players. They need to be great. We're not interested in good. We can find good. So they've been either great or we're going bargain shopping. And that's exactly where you want to be. Because the difference far more often than not between your good players and your bargain players, not that much. The difference a lot of times between your good players and your great to elite players ends up being a lot. And those are the players that make such a huge difference on your roster, specifically like a Reggie White and a Charles Woodson. You have the opportunity to go do it, you do it. And that's how Brian Gutekunst felt about Xavier McKinney, and he's right. So what is that criteria? One, he's an elite player at his position. Like there's no two ways about it. He is one of the top safeties in the NFL, period. End of story. Number two, he is young. He is 24 years old. He's not even 25 yet. As Brian Gutekunst said, his best football is ahead of him. His best 3 to 4 seasons of his career will probably be the next 3 to 4 seasons in the NFL, or maybe, you know, combined with the one he had last year and then the next 2 or 3. But Green Bay is getting him in the prime of his career. And it fit a position of need. Not arguably, their biggest need on the team. You had an elite player at your biggest area of need who fit your timeline, was 24 years old, going into the prime of his career, has been super durable and is a big time difference maker and sets your new defensive coordinator up for success. That is what is called hitting the criteria. He checked all the boxes. He was everything that you wanted. It's why that free agent signing always made so much sense. You didn't know if they were going to go that aggressively in that direction at that position, but they did. It was the right move. And I don't know how you can't be excited about Xavier McKinney, but I think that, you know, we always talk about, and we've talked about it a lot lately, of like Green Bay's draft philosophy. They have a very specific free agent philosophy, and I'm a huge believer that it's the right way to do business. I do think there are times, specifically if you look at like the off-ball linebacker position, right? They probably should have gotten a little bit more involved in the, hey, let's just find a good player at that position because the draft is weak. There are no bargain guys. The bargain guys can't really play. And you need players at that position. So I do think there are times where Green Bay maybe goes a little bit too much in that direction and avoids what is really an obvious need. But overall, I like the direction. It makes sense. If you have the money, go get the great player rather than a, you know, poo-poo platter of average to good players that you're overpaying for. And that elite player is probably going to make the difference far more often than not. He was then asked about a player that he'd like to pair with Xavier McKinney. Would he like a veteran? Would he like a rookie? And what Brian Gutekunst said is he would prefer a younger guy that would be able to grow alongside Xavier McKinney and that would have the best years of his career in front of him. You didn't even need to read between the lines, but very clearly it would read as if Brian Gutekunst is probably looking more towards the draft to fill that spot next to Xavier McKinney or continue to allow Anthony Johnson Jr. and some of the young players on this roster opportunities to compete for that spot rather than going and getting a veteran. If you were hoping for a Justin Simmons, that answer probably leaves you a little bit in the lurch and probably doesn't feel super confident that they're going to go in that direction. However, I do still believe Julian Blackmon fits that criteria. He's only 25 years old. He turns 26 in August. You probably sign him to what, a 2 to 3 year deal for Blackmon. So he's going to have 26, 27, maybe 28-year-old years on that contract. He'll also be in the prime of his career, coming off the best season of his career. Super athletic, super young, fits the role perfect. He'd be a great tag team partner with Xavier McKinney. That, to me, still makes a ton of sense. Whether or not Green Bay gets involved in that conversation will remain to be seen. To me, he's still the free agent option that makes the most sense. Still fits Brian Gutekunst's criteria for having that player next to him be able to come up and play together with McKinney for the foreseeable future. More likely, it's probably a draft pick, but we'll have to see what he, you know, ultimately does there and what type of player he gets. But I do still think Julian Blackmon makes a ton of sense. Justin Simmons, probably, like I said, not maybe too much in the cards after hearing that answer from Brian Gutekunst. Although he always keeps you on your toes. You never quite know for sure. He said absolutely they wanted to bring Aaron Jones back, and that clearly did not happen. He was also asked about potentially keeping or why they didn't keep or if they thought about keeping Aaron Jones and Josh Jacobs together. And he said they thought about it, but what he ultimately came to the conclusion of is that there would be too many salary cap repercussions down the road that it just didn't ultimately make it feasible. And I get that. We talk all the time about is running back a position that you really want to put a ton of resources in. Even just one of them, Aaron Jones or Josh Jacobs, is a pretty significant resource at the position. Now, we are seeing the NFL swing back a little bit to putting more money into that position, more resources into that position. Whether or not that's a good or bad thing, I think only time will tell, and we're going to have to kind of reevaluate in 5 to 10 years. But we are seeing the NFL as a whole kind of go in that direction. But putting two contracts into veteran players in Josh Jacobs and Aaron Jones, I can understand why Goot didn't want to go in that direction, knowing that he's got some pretty big contracts coming up down the line, specifically a Jordan Love contract that they're going to have to get figured out. And maybe it doesn't make a ton of sense to have that many resources put into both Aaron Jones and Josh Jacobs. I still think it would have been a really fun duo, but I can understand why he didn't necessarily want to go in that direction. Next up, he talked about Keyshawn Nixon. And with Keyshawn Nixon, he said that one, he brings stability to that room. I thought the most interesting aspect of this was he said that he had Jeff Hafley review all of Keyshawn Nixon's tape to make sure that Hafley felt that he would fit well within his defense and that he wanted him back. And Hafley gave him the Jeff Hafley stamp of approval. I think that's a really important aspect because Jeff Hafley could have watched the tape of Keyshawn Nixon and said, nah, not so sure. What are our other options here? And, you know, are there like, do I have a choice B or a choice C? Are there other free agents we can go after? But he didn't. He gave the stamp of approval. And this kind of goes back to a discussion we've had as well, where I said, when I looked at Keyshawn Nixon in free agency, and I'm like, all right, let's say Nixon walks. How do you want to fill that slot corner position? You don't have anything on the roster. Stokes outside, Valentine outside, Jair outside, Ballantyne outside. You don't have a slot corner on the roster. You could have maybe brought back a Darnell Savage, more on that a little bit later, try to play him in the slot. To me, that was not the answer either, and I'm very happy that they went in another direction, even if that direction was Keyshawn Nixon. You then look at the free agent market. You know, you could have went with like a Kenny Moore. You know, there's a couple other guys out there. There wasn't like, there's not like a huge difference. This is another one where like, is the difference between a Kenny Moore and a Keyshawn Nixon going to win you a Super Bowl or win you an extra game? Probably not. The difference probably isn't that strong. There are a handful of guys that play that slot position at a premium level. It's really difficult to get those guys. You're probably not getting your hands on them. And everyone else, it's just a struggle. The job description on the slot is just an impossible job description. Unless you are Charles Woodson in your prime or Jalen Ramsey in your prime. I know Isaiah McDuffie did a really good job with it last year, but like this is a very tough job to fill. And there's a huge reason why. Number one, you have to be durable enough, strong enough, physical enough at that position to hold up against the run. And not just hold up against the run, but to hold up against pulling guards, pulling tackles. Like you could see Trent Williams coming at you. You know, you play the 49ers, you might see Trent Williams pull at you. You might see George Kittle pull at you. You might see Kyle Juszczyk pull at you, like, and run right at your face. And that's just the guy that's blocking you. Even if you somehow get off that block, you still have to make the play on the running back, which, by the way, now you can't hip drop tackle him either. That's going to be a little bit tougher. But just doing that, for all the people who are like, hey, just play Jair in the slot. You want the guy with the bad shoulder to play in that position for 17 games? Other teams are just going to run right at that dude and say, hey, can you stop the run, number one? And if he can't, even if he does, even if he does a really good job of it, which, by the way, Jair is not good at that. But even if he would, he's breaking down. There's no way he's not lasting a 17-game season. You're taking one of your best cover guys off the field due to injury because you're putting him in harm's way game after game after game after game and having him go up against guards, tackles, tight ends, and fullbacks. So you have to be able to have the physicality to be able to do that. And then here's the other thing. If you have the physicality, if you can do that, do you also have the cover skills? And even if you do, if you have the cover skills, good luck. Because guess who's lining up in the slot? Could be Travis Kelce. It could be George Kittle. Could be, you know, TJ Hockenson. Could be Mark Andrews. Some of these big physical tight ends. 5'10 Keyshawn Nixon. Good luck, buddy. See what you can do. Or if you're maybe more one of the bigger, more physical corner slash safeties that can line up there. All right. Christian McCaffrey, step right up. You could have one of these shifty running backs that motions into the slot, and now you have to cover one of them. Or it could also be Tyreek Hill. It could be Justin Jefferson. It could be Ja'Marr Chase. It could be every flavor, shape, size, and, you know, just ridiculous ability. You could go against a power forward. You could go against the, you know, shiftiest, you know, slot receivers in the world that are so good at just running those two-way goes. You could go against, again, some of the running backs that are able to do all that stuff. It is just a nightmare's nightmare. And by the way, in a corner situation, you have the boundary on your side to kind of use to your advantage. In the slot, good luck. You don't have that. And here's the thing. Keyshawn Nixon played more slot snaps than any corner in the NFL a season ago, than any player in the NFL a season ago. That was his first time playing full-time slot corner. And I, number one, thought he got better as the season went along. And number two, like, he was mostly what I would just describe as fine. Having a fine slot corner that you can, no pun intended, slot into that position, and as Brian Gutekunst said, have some stability at that position, it makes sense. And by the way, Keyshawn Nixon, 26 years old. He turns 27 in June. He's still on pretty much that familiar timeline. And if Nixon just doesn't cut it, and you end up drafting a corner, and that corner becomes a better slot player than Keyshawn Nixon was, great. You might say, well, then yeah, but you overpaid for Nixon. Okay, maybe, but he's your backup slot. He's probably your number four corner. And outside of that, he's going to play every special teams, be your primary kick returner, can help on punt returns, can play some offense if you need him to. That has so much value on a 48-man game day roster. So I don't have an issue with this. I think it was probably the smart thing to do. I do think it was a little bit of an overpay, but I agree with Goody that stability has value. And now Goody doesn't have to, again, go into a draft saying like, well, we better get a slot corner because if not, we're just screwed. They have somebody there who can play the position. I understand the signing. Like I said, probably a little bit of an overpay, but I don't think it's anything that you're going to lose sleep over. And what if he got, you know, probably what, $4.5 million to $5 million is probably the right value for that. And it's like a $1 to $1.5 million difference. It's not that big of a deal. It's a rounding error more than anything. They'll be fine. I agree with Goody. It's the right move to make and happy that Keyshawn is back. He also talked about Jordan Love's contract and more specifically, not much specific here, but that they had preliminary discussions about the contract. And that's all there is to know here. The thing that he did get asked of like, hey, are you worried about him just being a one-year wonder? You know, he really came on second half of the season. It's a small sample size. Now you got to give him this huge, massive contract. And I thought Goody had a great answer saying, hey, this isn't yet. Yes. Like from on the field standpoint, we know that, you know, what we saw and it is a small sample, but, and I'm clearly paraphrasing here, we've seen him for 4 years. We know the player, we know the person, we know the work ethic, and that's why we feel confident in giving him a contract. And that makes sense. And what are your other options? You're going to trade up to get one of these rookie quarterbacks and see that, you know, hope that he can be Jordan Love? You know, good luck. You don't know what you're going to get. There's no other option here. And if you don't pay him top of the market, he's going to walk. You can't let him walk. And just giving him the contract is the right thing to do. So he's 100% right. They know who he is. He's going to continue to work hard. We saw some flashes of brilliance from Jordan Love a season ago. Hopefully he continues on that trajectory and that progression. And if so, he will be money well spent. Like I said, there's no other option anyway. So it's not even much of a discussion point. You hope that he lives up to it. I think he will. I'm excited about it. But Goody's right that this is the right deal to make. And they know who he is. And that's why they're able to give him that contract. Next up, he talked about off-ball linebacker. One very complimentary of Isaiah McDuffie, said he feels a little bit more comfortable now that Christian Welch and Eric Wilson are back. Does sound like he feels semi-confident that if Eric Wilson needs to play a little bit of actual defense, that they feel semi-comfortable in going in that direction. But here were the big two things, and I'm so happy he said it, and he explained it in a way that I've been sort of trying to say, but I don't think I've articulated it super well. We've talked all about the 4-3. And my biggest takeaway, this I have articulated very clearly, my biggest takeaway this entire time before they even moved to a 4-3 is it doesn't matter. What I mean is, as Brian Gutekunst said, it's 15% of the time. They're going to play base 15% of the time, if that. He said even the highest percentages in the league are around 20%. You're going to get three linebackers on the field extremely sparingly. And in some games, you're barely going to see it at all. So yes, we work ourselves into a tizzy and, you know, have to talk about everything, which is great. I love talking about everything. You guys know that. But like this whole 4-3 thing and how it's going to matter, there's going to be two linebackers on the field 80 to 85% of the time. And when there's not, it's more likely that maybe there's one linebacker on the field than that there's three. So I don't necessarily get super concerned with needing three big time starting linebackers. I do think they need depth. I do think they need an upgrade from Isaiah McDuffie. I think ideally Isaiah McDuffie, you know, is that three, and then you're looking at Eric Wilson more as that four. So, you know, you really need that one or two guy next to Quay. Whether or not they can do that and how they attack that in the draft, we're going to have to wait and see, but that's going to be a big piece of this. But here's the bigger thing that he said. He was asked about the differences in the skill sets, weak side, middle, strong side, and what he wants to see at both, you know, all those positions. And this is what I've struggled articulating, but I'm so happy he said it. Basically, they're the same. You have to be the same now. You have to be versatile. And he's so right, because let's say you go out and get a big time run stopping linebacker to play next to Quay. Quay can be your pass guy and the other guy can be your run guy. That might sound great, but guess what? As Brian Gutekunst said, here's what happens. Quay goes down and you're not going to play Eric Wilson full time. So your run stopping guy is now on the field full time, but he can't, you know, cover. All right, well, good luck. See what you can do, Jeff Hafley. You've got a linebacker on the field that can't cover, or vice versa. They're, you know, great cover guys, but they can't stop the run. All right. You know, you've got these cover guys that are on the field, but your run linebacker goes down and now you've only got guys who can cover. They can't stop the run. Good luck, Jeff Hafley. See what you can do. You have to be able to do everything. And that's exactly what he said. There's not really a differentiator anymore between your strong side, your weak side. There's two linebackers on the field and they need to be able to do everything. They need to be able to stop the run. They need to be able to take on blocks. They need to be able to cover. And that's what you have to look for. Now, my counter to Brian Gutekunst would be, well, then you better pay up for that player if you need them to do everything. If you want them to attack gaps, if you want them to cover, get sideline to sideline, make open field tackles, take on blocks, there's precious few of guys who can do all of it. And if you need two of them, you better be willing to at least draft high or pay up for that. Because right now you've got a guy that can do some of it in Quay Walker. Isaiah McDuffie can do less of it. And then you don't have many options after that. So I agree with his philosophy. And I'm so glad that he said it. You don't need a weak, a strong, a Mike, and all. It's out the window. You got two linebackers. They need to do everything. But my counter is, then go out and get those guys who can do everything, because you don't have two on the roster right now. I'm not sure you have one on the roster right now. So that would be my counter to Goody. But overall, very much, once again, agree with his assessment. Like I said, he did express some confidence in Isaiah McDuffie as well. And again, said he felt a little bit more comfortable with Eric Wilson and Christian Welch back in the fold. Surely he's going to add more bodies to that competition in for training camp, either via the draft or via bargain free agency at some point. He spoke confidently about Brenton Cox, Carrington Valentine, and Sean Ryan, and about their progressions as players. He mentions that he still likes bigger guys on the edge. He did say that there sometimes can be a role for some of the smaller guys because they can provide a different skill set and they can be used on special teams a little bit more, but expect Goody to still prioritize big guys on the edge, even though they're going to a 4-3 in this new Jeff Hafley defense. And he, you know, very blatantly said that AJ Dillon was kind of like an unexpected surprise. They didn't really expect him back, which I thought was just like, all right, just tell it like it is, Brian. But it is like, no, none of us expected him back, and they got him on the exemption, the 4-year thing. And it worked out well, worked out certainly great for Green Bay. I'm not sure I could say it worked out great for Dillon. I'm sure he would liked a bigger contract on the open market, but I'm sure he wanted to stay in Green Bay in some capacity too. And I'm sure at least that side worked out for him. Those were the big takeaways from the press conference from Goody. Last but not least, something I want to just go over really, really quick: position changes. There was a funny post on Reddit, very well done to whoever posted it, of like, would Jeff Janis be a perfect fullback? And it was tongue in cheek, I think. But he's making fun of, like, because there's been so much conversation of like, AJ Dillon's not a running back. He's a fullback, or he's a H-back. Guys, I promise you, AJ Dillon is not a fullback. He's not an H-back. He doesn't have the route running ability or the receiving chops to be an H-back. He doesn't have the run blocking ability to be either a fullback or an H-back. He is a running back. Now, your mileage may vary as to how good of a running back he is. And if he is a perfect fit for a running back in the modern NFL, I am happy to have that conversation. But I promise you, he is not a fullback. He is not an H-back. And we can end that discussion once and for all. Can you use him every once in a while on some of those dual running back sweep plays where he's the lead blocker and he gets matched up on a corner where he can hopefully eliminate that corner? Yes. Yes, you can do that. But that does not make him a fullback. It does not make him an H-back. Next, Darnell Savage. It was announced he will be playing nickel in Jacksonville. Great. Use him in nickel in Jacksonville. I saw all the time, Green Bay should have used him as nickel. This is going to be another example of a defensive back going to another place and he's just going to tear it up there. He's not. He's not a nickel. He's a fine player that gets exposed far too often and is extremely inconsistent. And if you remember, in the end of the 2022 season, for a handful of games, we got to see Darnell Savage in the nickel, in the slot. And you know what? He looked like Darnell Savage, the same inconsistent play, poor coverage, missed tackles, all of it. The whole thing that always comes with Darnell Savage, whether it's at safety, box safety, free safety, in the slot, it's always the same. There's going to be some good stuff. There's too much bad stuff. It's far too inconsistent. And I promise you, that's what's going to happen in Jacksonville as well. And then the whole Keyshawn Nixon, move him to safety. He's not a safety. He's a slot guy. My overarching takeaway here, stop trying to move people into different positions. A few exceptions. There are every once in a while where you find a Raven Green or a Tariq Carpenter or a, the Cowboys did this with both Jayron Kearse, who's still a free agent, by the way, Marquise Bell, where you take a safety and you move him into a hybrid linebacker position. Josh Jones, the Packers did it with, and if Jones would have adopted it, I think it actually would have worked a lot better. He just wanted to stay at safety, even though he would have fit much better as that box, you know, sort of off-ball linebacker hybrid player. I do think there's opportunities every once in a while to do that, although the overarching success rate has not been great on that in the NFL. And then, of course, like sometimes the O-line versatility where you draft a tackle and move him to guard or center, that can work as well. But overall, stop trying to change people's positions. This is the NFL. You don't, like, guys aren't going to learn on the fly. It's hard enough for them in the NFL right now to learn the positions they've been playing their whole career. Most of these guys are not made to switch positions. It just doesn't work out. It's not worth it. And they're not going to, like, again, these guys, specifically Dylan, Savage, Nixon, they're not even meant for it in the first place. All right, off my soapbox. That is going to do it for me today for a episode where I thought, like, yeah, we've got a couple fun things to talk about on Goody's episode. We always find a ton to talk about. But like I said, I thought there was a lot of really intriguing things from Goody's press conference. Glad we got to break all those down. Hope you guys enjoyed it. I'll be right back here tomorrow with an all new episode. Shout out to our Hall of Fame and All Pro members, Mosey to Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Shea Bradad, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Bremen, David Prendergast, and Dan Miller. I'll see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.